This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
And so we're getting into our Africa in focus conversation, and simply we're looking at the US in terms of revisiting its trade relations with African countries, and what does this potentially mean for business. And so we are joined online by Gideon Chitanga, who is a research associate at the Center for the Study of the United States. Gideon, good evening.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you very much, Gideon. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and thank you. Good evening to your audience.
And maybe just getting into a journey of, kind of just starting point of what's the history of the U.S. and trade in the context of Africa as a continent, as well as then the countries that reside in the continent and how that's changed over time. And I think I'm asking that so that it starts to at least create a foundational base from which we might understand why they may be inspired to revisit some of those trade relations.
So I want to try to frame the relationship in a very basic language, right? It's difficult not to mention the colonial history when you talk about Africa. So because that's where we come from. During the colonial times, the U.S. was very close to different colonial regimes. And then as African countries became independent, the U.S. Business interests have always been driven by politics, what we call geostrategic interests. Basically, what do you get from which countries in terms of enhancing influence? And so after independence, this interest defined the relations between the U.S. with the African continent. Then the idea of promoting democracy after 1989 became the major driver in U.S. foreign policy and its partnership with African countries. So those countries which were democratic in the way that the U.S. defined democracy, you hold free and fair elections, you respect human rights, rule of law, constitutionalism, you create a framework that allows private business to flourish, became the closest partners of the U.S. And in countries which were in the opposite side, which were viewed as authoritarian and dictatorial, the U.S. Invoked different types of policy instruments to try and influence change in those countries, or what policymakers would call the democracy building. So as each African country attained independence,
so
the different types of relations with the U.S. emerged. But other than the dominance of the democracy policy framework and initiatives since 1989, I also think that the reforms at the AU, and which also translated to reforms in sub-regional organizations, translated to some aspect of convergence or trying to unify African interests in terms of bargaining with the U.S. And so these regional institutions are very crucial. Now and then you hear the AU Agenda 2063 and so on being mentioned. These are instruments, African policy instruments, that the U.S. is mentioning as part of the things that they have to deal with in a harmonized way in addressing Africa. But having just given that narrative, I think we are in a very exciting, if not critical, period geopolitically in terms of the interest of big powers and how these interests are again putting Africa in focus. So as we talk about the visit by Secretary Blinken to South Africa, yeah, and then you proceed to Rwanda and to the DRC and later Rwanda, you probably are aware that some of the officials were in Uganda. Just last week, the Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov was in East Africa. Last month, the I think it's the Secretary of Foreign Affairs of the Chinese Republic, other diplomatic officials were in East Africa and they were visiting other parts of Africa. So Africa is in that center, is the centerpiece that is attracting all kinds of global influence at the moment. And it's unavoidable to say that the U.S., in the back of the mind of its officials, there's Russia, there's China. It is also important to mention that in the past, I think since 2009, the U.S. has slowly retreated from Africa in the sense of building diplomatic relations, in the sense of investment. So the biggest investor as we speak since 2009 in Africa as the continent is China.
China. Mm.
Followed by the US, which is trying to play catch up. South Africa is the biggest trading partner with the US at about $13 billion or so US dollars going back and forth. But interestingly, South Africa is the biggest trading partner with China in Africa. So this is quite crucial. I followed a bit the statement, the government strategy of the U.S., which Secretary Blinken gave today, and it mentions a lot of, quite a number of issues. They are summarized into four issues, but these are just traditional issues that we are generally aware of, the interest in trade, democracy, peace and security. But I think it is crucial to highlight that also in the statement, I think the key issues also touched on COVID. Then you have a list of issues of cooperation, health, investment, trade, and so forth. I do not think that in terms of strategy, partnering with private investors, channeling resources through civil society and creating a framework that is aligned to the U.S. model of the economy is changed. What I think is shifting is the amount of attention that is being given to Africa by the U.S. And the U.S. is making a statement that Africa is an important partner and they are willing to grow the relationship and the partnership. But specifically, the stimulating factor is that geostrategically and in terms of resources, in terms of political capital, the U.S. has fallen behind and they are looking into the future and saying they cannot leave Africa to either China or influence from Russia because Africa has a lot of natural resources that are required. Africa has the political capital that South Africa has, and it influences. If South Africa is the entry point to Africa, but it also represents African countries in different multilateral institutions. It has a big voice in the African Union, and these factors are combining to put Africa at the center again of international relations at a very critical point.
And I mean, I think, Gideon, one of the things that I want us to reflect on very quickly after this ad break that we're going to go to is exactly that one, you know, the terms of trade between us and the U.S. are, by the design, very, very different. You know, the U.S. is kind of approached kind of very blanket, policy approaches like the AGOA act as an arrowhead. For example, it's AGOA is one of them, but you even look at the design thinking of that and you look at some of the other trade terms that we've got around, the East, and they look very different in terms of their design thinking themselves. And so I'm quite interested to understand exactly then ultimately what would be the end game, given that philosophically they've approached trade quite differently. Listen, it is 23 minutes after 7 o'clock, and before we pick up that question that I had asked Gideon to reflect on, and Power Listener, we are in conversation with Gideon Chitanga, who's a research associate at at the Center for Study of the United States. And of course, we are reflecting on the U.S.'s revisiting its trade relations, visiting Rwanda, Uganda, DRC, South Africa. And yeah, they're asking critical questions around how do they reimagine the trade relations that they've got. But before we pick that that question up, I did ask Gideon before the break. We've got Z from Midrand also calling in to weigh in on some of our conversations. Z, good evening.
Hi, Z. Thank you for taking my call. I'm hearing, I'm following your conversation, but mine is on a practical level. Just seeing around, I'm having a small business in agriculture, and I'm just seeing around, and I'm a town planner and town and regional planner by profession. So I'm just observing that, you know, that the Chinese are buying a whole lot of land around Midrand, around, let me say, just in Africa, in South Africa, and just to observe that, you know, it's like the Chinese are taking, you know, what we have, the resources that we have, and our governments are just, it's just a free trade for all. I don't know whether if the government is willing to have some restrictions in terms of natural resources, maybe. It's better to, you know, I don't have the lingo that you have, but just to limit the trade, the terms of reference of trade in terms of natural resources, that Africa must not be a free-for-all. I mean, America has extracted our Anglo, and how much more can we allow these guys to just come in? So what are the terms of reference for this trade, especially natural resources? I might not have the lingo that you have.
No,
but
you've got...
can help me out in asking
this. No, thank you, Susie. You've got the perfect lingo, because it is asking a very kind of straightforward question, is that when we do think about trade... what are we willing to give up, right? And there's often a question around, you know, this debt trap diplomacy that they often, this is the other complex linguists see that they use around China, where they put you into a debt trap and that informs a certain political diplomacy that they do that ultimately sees them taking land grabs, etc. You know, whenever you go to even Zambia, they call the cars there, they call them .coms, the taxis, because of the Chinese infiltration there. And you know, of course, the history of the relationship between Zambia and China. And you can go on into other places of the continent as well, where the extent to which debt then becomes a part of the conversation, how does it translate into concessionary agreements, etc., that then give away a lot of things. Tswane is one of those areas. 2011, there's a big noise around the extent to which Chinese people, I guess, got land parcels in South Africa. Follow that story and you'll start to understand exactly, I think, the point Sisi was making this. So Sisi, you're not using any lingo that is not identifiable. I think it's the perfect lingo that look around. And this debt trap diplomacy can truly, I think, start to change the shape of our economy as well. We've got likes of Huawei being here and not complying with our local laws, where 84% of their staff was Chinese. I mean, that makes absolutely no sense. And so these are some of the things that USSC is asking. So how do we ensure that when we are dealing trade relations, and Gideon, I'm going to bring this back to you, how do we ensure that even when you've got the lower hand, is that you're able to keep some sovereignty in a way that actually acts in the best interest of your citizens?
I think I will try to link my response to the question on AGOA, right? But I want to say that so with respect to the broader question about making sure that the citizens are protected, or their interest at least is protected, it is important for African governments to be very clear at a national level and at a regional and continental level about which resources can they allow private investors or foreign investors to participate in. The second question is about transparency. So your first call of transparency is your government or your local governing authority. So it's all the government structures. I think they have to be very open, so that the citizens, and in South Africa, it's actually great because South Africa is a democracy, so the citizens eventually vote, and their vote has to be aligned to these things. So they have to be to know what is going on or to be aware. Then the other issue that I think is very important to address is the issue of debt and this idea of the debt trap. It has become such a huge international debate, and I think it is in the mix of the language that major powers use and also countries use, and it has also been politicized. And I think that is that happens because there is no transparency about what African countries borrow, how they use what they borrow, and what it is used for. At the end, when whatever is borrowed is used, at the end, you probably are aware that a bridge was being built here with so much money from the Chinese, but you don't see the bridge. And so it feeds into different kinds of perceptions. But I think Africa needs a lot of investment because we are way behind in terms of infrastructure development. And I'm broadening the term infrastructure to include technological infrastructure that relates to internet and so on, and modernization, your roads, your transport systems. We probably have the best transport system relatively in Johannesburg and Pretoria, but as you go out, you start to see that the system is lesser and probably not as good as it should be. There are less and less flights between African countries. We probably would be comfortably traveling in trains between Limpopo and Johannesburg or Gauteng and the Eastern Cape. And for us to get this kind of investment, I will say the Chinese have been in the forefront of pumping money into infrastructure development in African countries.
It is 35 minutes after 7 o'clock, Power Listener, and we are about to close off our conversation that we are having with Gideon Chitanga, who is a research associate, certainly at the Center for the Study of the United States, helping us think through and find some texture around the U.S. Revisiting its trade relations with the likes of Rwanda, DRC, South Africa, etc. And so certainly, I think, a lot of interesting conversation on the back of Blinken's visit into the continent. And Gideon, you are making a point there about AGOA.
Yes. So I'll try to be very short. To Usisi, who is a farmer, AGOA is a form of conditionality. It is a law that allows certain people to export to the U.S. or certain countries to export to the U.S. on condition that they meet certain regulations or they meet the AGOA law. So in other words, the U.S. is not necessarily an open market for African countries, but it's only open to the extent that there are certain selected countries which meet certain market qualifications so that they can export into the U.S. And these markets qualifications are really very comprehensive, but they also include things like human rights, rule of law, and so on and so on, property rights. Then the typical business things like labor laws and regulations in your country. Then your product is to meet certain standards so that you can export. So if we are going to say these standards are great in terms of maintaining certain standards and qualities, I think that is great. But I think that part of the things that the U.S. might have to change is actually AGOA itself. And I understand that it was renegotiated and extended to 2025, but there were a lot of issues that African countries were raising.
Exciting, yeah.
Yes, and I would actually say that coming out of this meeting, the U.S. should be rethinking opening itself to be a bigger market for goods from Africa, just as African countries are importing freely from the U.S. and freely from many other countries. So you have a free and regulated economy and open trade is espoused by the capitalist model that the U.S. Envisage to uphold. But having said that, I think I would want to quickly say I think Africa is at a very strategic position. We are seeing a lot of geopolitical rivalry between the major powers. You would say probably the most important relationship now is between the, like now in the 21st century, is between the U.S. and China. And you can say the most important relationship for Africans is between South Africa, Nigeria, Egypt, with the U.S. and China.
And maybe sprinkle in Morocco, there, Kenya, and Rwanda.
And Morocco and the other layer of countries like Rwanda, DRC, they are at a lower level. But these countries that I have mentioned are the key power brokers.
Gideon, let's quickly take a call coming from Deep Kloof. Temba, good evening.
Good evening. It's really a land grab in Africa. Sakata, a Japanese company, owns farms. One is near Lanseria Airport. China is buying left and right, opening malls, centers, and those centers don't pay tax because there are no receipts issued for purchases, you know. And China has been buying mine dumps in Johannesburg. The one near Offerton is completely gone, and there's one near the M2. It's also gone. So they are perpetuating this illegal mining problem.
And
they are the brokers. The Zamazamas are just at the bottom feeders. The brokers of these minerals, because methods being used in the past, leaving some of the ore in the soil, you know. So they're reprocessing. So it's free for all.
No, thanks a lot, Temba. And I think Gideon, closing remarks on that very point is about simply how do you make sure that when you're dealing with a big country and you're relatively smaller, how do you make sure that your terms of trade are productive to the actual trade itself and not to the land grabs and the ultimate recolonization?
Yes. So what I was going to conclude by saying is I think that African countries are at a better strategic position than any other time to maximize their interest or to balance their interest, given where they are in terms of their relationship with China and their relationship with the U.S. They are the ones who are going to make the difference by actually convincing these big countries to play together, to continue to dialogue. And in that, to put their concerns on the table. Maybe the last critical point to make is that, you see, the things that our brother just mentioned about the mining dump and other investments, I think we need to be pushing our countries to say that we want to see more young people involved in any type of businesses that are closer to the community. We want to see partnerships that reflect ourselves in this business investment. And if you are a community, then you must see yourself in such a venture. It doesn't matter whether it is with the Americans or with the Chinese or whoever comes, any investor. And we must use our democratic whip, the vote, to say, if you are not going to do that, then we are not going to vote for you. If you are not going to do that, then we are not going to back you. And I think South Africa is a system that allows citizens to do that.
Yeah, certainly. And yeah, let's hope that we do leverage the strategic, I guess, turning point and pivoting point that we find ourselves at this point in time, where we're very important pieces of the chess puzzle, also as geopolitics continue, I think, to work themselves around us and within us and through us. And so certainly, I think, lots to continue looking at, particularly around the trade relations between the East and the West. Gideon, thank you very much, sir, and looking forward to having these kinds of conversations with you again.
Thank you so much.
Power listener, that was Gideon Chitanga, who is a research associate at the Center for the Study of the United States.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.